Try that again. Okay.
We're sure we're going to.
That's it. So this morning we're going to focus on an idea it's inherent in our life and it's very important to deal with, but sometimes it's a challenge. And so I want to use Parshas Baaloscha and the Torah's description of a series of events to help us navigate, perhaps, this idea, which is just information. So I'll welcome thoughts. I'm still working it out on myself, on my own. But this idea begins with an incredibly inspiring experience. Amazing. And that is the experience of Talmud Torah, of studying Torah, from someone who is a giant. And I share this experience with you right now because we could still have this. We have little crumbs, little opportunities. For those of us who are too young to have had the opportunity to meet or learn from Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, who was one of the preeminent Torah giants of the 20th century, there are still some ways, there are still some opportunities that present themselves. And sometimes you can listen quietly . It's difficult to hear, but I'm just going to let you listen for 1 second. That is the voice of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. So I will invite you, it's actually easier to hear if you put on headphones. I would invite you to go online to YU Torah to listen to this shiur on Parshas Baaloscha, which is incredible. It is revolutionary. It's amazing. Rabbi Soloveitchik, in one shiur, totally transforms your understanding of Sefer Bamidbar, and lays out for you clearly, unexpectedly, how simple the whole development of Chumash Bamidbar is. And what the great gaonus of Rav Soloveitchik is, as is often the case, is that after he gives the shiur, you say to yourself, that was so obvious. Why didn't I think of that? Why didn't I put all those pieces together? And the thesis of Rav Soloveitchik is that Sefer Bamidbar is this incredible, historic, inexorable, grand, and great march of the Jewish people to the land of Israel. So the parasha begins, in the beginning of Bamidbar, we begin by counting the people. We set up digalim, flags, for traveling. Then we move to Parshas Noso. We talk about the establishment of the Mishkan, who's going to, you know, the functionaries, who's going to carry the Mishkan, who's going to break it down, who's going to put it back up. It's all about this journey, the journey from the Midbar to Eretz Yisrael. It was supposed to be a quick journey. We're going to be going straight from Har Sinai to Israel nonstop. And the description is amazing because it turns to Parshas Baaloscha after the Parsha of the Nesim who inaugurate the Mishkan. So Aaron is consoled, like Rashi says, with the lighting of the menorah, and then we have the Hakravas Halevim. Why do we have Hakravas Halevim? Because they're the ones who are serving in the Mishkan. The Mishkan is the center point of this whole movement. After that we have Pesach Sheni. And then we turn to our source page. This parsha, which begins, a parsha in the Torah is a paragraph. It's set aside by breaks. So this parsha begins in Perek Tes, Pasuk Tes Vav. And you see in the source sheets, there's a little pay in parentheses to signify where it begins, where it ends. Uv'yom ha'kimas ha'mishkan, On the day that they established the Mishkan, what was resting on the Mishkan?
Cloud.
A cloud, that's right. Kisah ha'anan es ha-Mishkan. And then at night it would be a pillar of fire. What happened to the cloud over time? It would move and tell them where to go. What did Moshe Rabbeinu then have to build in the next parsha? We have Aseh lecha shtei chatzotzos kesef. Build two
trumpets.
Horns, trumpets. Why do you need trumpets? To call the people. And not only is it to call the people, v'chisavo melchama, and in Perek Yud Pasuk Tes, on the fourth line from the end of this paragraph, first section, when there is a war, who's fighting us? What war are we talking about? V'chisavo melchama be'artzachem. Because where are we going? We're going to Israel, obviously. So then what happens in the next section, the next parsha? Vayhi, it was Bashana Hashenis in the second year, Bachodesh Hasheni in the second month, in ER year 2. Be'esrim Lachodesh, Bachodesh Nala Anan. And they traveled. So they traveled exactly according to the flags. And then, in the next, you go down, three quarters of the way down this chunk on the text, you see Perek Yud Pasuk Chavtes, Vayomer Moshe Lechova Ben Reuel Hamidyani Chosein Moshe, No Sim Anachnu, we're going, we are traveling, No Seya, we're traveling, where are we traveling? That's right. He says, come along, we're going. What do you mean, where are we going? We're going to Israel. This is the grand march. This is the great march. Next line, Vayhi ben Saharon. The Aron lifted up. And then we hit a road bump, a speed bump. We have a little episode of misonanim, of people complaining. And then the Asaf Suf on the top of the next column, the remnant who start asking for meat. And then something really bad happens. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayomer Moshe Hashem, Lama Hariosa La'avdecha V'lama Lo Tzasichem Be'inecha. Moshe Rabbeinu says on Pasuk Yud Aleph on the top, he says, why have you done bad to me? I can't take it anymore, God. Am I their mother? Am I their babysitter? Am I their nursemaid that I should have to deal with this? We get the Shivim Zekanim, and then we get the story of the Kivros HaTava. So Rav Soloveitchik asks a simple question. He says, why did Moshe Rabbeinu give up now? He stood up for the Chet HaEgel, for the people, and now he's going to just throw in the towel because they're asking for lunch? So Rav Soloveitchik explains in this more than an hour-long magisterial talk. And you can, when you hear that voice, that accented voice, it's just, it's like a magnetic experience. You're connecting to somebody from another world, from another generation. The technology, what a gift to listen to that voice. And it conveys so much. Says Rav Soloveitchik, Moshe Rabbeinu looked at the people and he says, I can't do this anymore because we're not on the same page. We were on a grand march, the destiny of human history to go into the land of Israel and set it up. And you guys, what do you want to talk about? You want to talk about watermelons. You want to talk about fish. Sit around and eat fish. Moshe Rabbeinu says, we're not on the same journey. And it all starts to fall apart. So we got complaints about food. Then we have the people dying from the man. Next week, what are we going to have? Parsha Shalach, the catastrophe of the Meraglim. Don't worry, it's not over after that, because Korach is going to show up very soon after. And it's an epic failure. So we turn around and we go 40 years in the desert. Because we totally bombed the Grand March. We bombed the Grand March.
Why didn't they ask for Meraglim now? This was the journey going to Israel, and all of a sudden later.
Good question. So, it could be this is the first opportunity. for them to ask for Meraglim. It would make sense that they're going to ask for Meraglim right now. But maybe there's something even more, which we'll get back to hopefully. So this was the shiur from Rav Soloveitchik. Now I'm totally doing it an injustice, because it's amazing! So I heard that shiur, and it stuck with me for so many years now. But this year, so I started thinking, well, if that's true, so now what? Meaning, the Rav explains to us the whole map of the story, and it's so beautiful, and it all makes sense, all the pieces of the puzzle about the grand march and then the grand collapse. But I ask myself now, so why do we have to read this every year? If you really get into this concept, if you really buy this idea, then the despair, God forbid, Rachmon Litzlan, the depression, the collapse is so bad. Now when you think about that, when you read the end of Parshas Baloscha, it's almost like, I can't turn the page. I can't see it happen. And yet we have to watch this same movie again and again and again every single year. So I asked the Rabbona Shalom, I say to him, why were you doing this to us? Let's just move on. We can't look at the story again. It's so bad. This is the worst, perhaps, calamity, the series of calamities. You know, once you get into Parsha Shlach and they're going to get sent back 40 years in the desert, that might even be worse than the Chet HaEgel, than the sin of the golden calf. So why are we supposed to relive this portion? That's what I want to understand. What's the message? What's the point of reliving the grand catastrophe? Now within that, there is a second question. Because if you go back to the first side of the page, on the bottom, the third chunk of text, you have here Perek Yud, Psukim Lamed Hei, and Lamed Vav. If you notice at the end of the last chunk of text, there is a Samach, that means Stuma, paragraph break, in parentheses. And what's before that, Samach, at the end of the last chunk of text? Right? The backwards Nun. And what is at the end of those two verses, at the end of Lamed Vav? Vern, you see it there? I don't know if it's clear enough. It got smudged on my text. You see it? There's another backwards nun. So why is there a backwards nun? Why is there a backwards nun before and after Parshas Vayhi Binsoah Ha'aron? And it was when the Aron traveled.
Separate sefer.
Thank you. The Gemara says that these psukim, Gemara discusses this in Masechet Shabbos in a different context of what is considered a whole book for purposes of Shemus, for example. We call it Shemus, but in the old days, let's say you had a worn-out Torah scroll. When does it have Kedusha? When does it lose Kedusha? What's the minimum size? How big? How small? So the Gemara says, 85 letters. Where'd they get 85 letters? Well, there is one parsha, there is one book, not just a parsha, excuse me, a book that's 85 letters. What book is that? This little section of Vayhi Binsoah is one book. So much so that one opinion in the Talmud says, well, that's why there are seven books of Moses, if you didn't know. You thought there were five. There were actually seven. Bamidbar is three. It's everything until this nun, the nuns, and then after the nuns. So it's actually seven books of Moshe. So Rashi quotes from Chazal that we put these backwards nuns to demarcate that this is a separate sefer, but not just that. We put it here, Rashi says, Lomar She'in Zem Mekomo, to tell you this is not its place. It does not belong here. Vayhi Binsoah doesn't belong here. It should have been elsewhere. But why did the Rabbeinu Shalom put it here? Anybody remember?
To break up all the
right?
Bad things in a row.
Right, to break up, to interpose, so that there shouldn't be a sequence of calamities. We don't want to have three consecutive stories of tragedy. So we'll take the parasha of Vayimitzar, we'll just stick it in there, and we'll continue. So many ask, why is this here? What happened before that was such a calamity? It just says, Vayisu mehar Hashem derech shlosh yom, in Pasuk Lamed Gimel in 33, it says they traveled, at the end of the second chunk of text, they traveled from the mountain of Hashem for 3 days. So what's so bad about that? So Rashi quotes from our sages who say, they ran away from Har Sinai like a child running away from school. And if your experience with the Ribbono Shel Olam is so powerful and so beautiful and so meaningful, you're not going to run away like a child. So I ask myself, of all the parshas that could have been chosen to provide a little break, to teach the lesson that that you can't have such a sequence of consistency among tragedies, why'd you have to pick this section? Tu psukim vavayhi ben sa'aron. I don't know, I never thought about that before. You could have picked any other set of random psukim about something. You could have put the chatzotzos over here, you could have put the, I don't know, tzitzis, you could have put anything. And it's the pasuk of vayhi ben sa'aron. That's my second question. And then we come to my third question, which is all the way at the end of the parsha. Turn the page over to the end. After the episode of the slav, when the Jews are given in Kivros HaTaiva, they're given the meat, and then there's a terrible plague, people are dying. We leave, and we go to Chatzeros. And we go to the beginning of Perek Yud Beis, which is on the fifth line in the second section of text on the second side. Go down five lines. You see there's a pei. That's a parsha psucha. Aleph, verse number one, Vatadaber Miriam va'aharon b'moshe. Miriam and Aaron spoke about Moshe, about the Isha who Kushis, this woman who he took, because he took a Kushis woman. So that's not really, I don't want to focus on that for the moment, what exactly they were saying about him. But we learn the story of Miriam. What did Miriam do? Right, she spoke negatively about her brother. And what happens to her?
Saras.
Afflicted with saras. So Hashem says to her, who do you think you are? My Moshe Rabbeinu is different. And Hashem is upset, he leaves, in Vos Pasuk Yud, the cloud moves away, and Miriam is in Mitzoras. She is afflicted with Saras. So what do they do? Moshe davens for her, and therefore she has to be secluded in Pasuk Yud Dalet for 7 days. Tisager Shivas Yamim. And the last two psukim, Vatisager Miriam Chut Michutz L'machaneh Shivas Yamim, V'om Lo Nasa'ad He'aseif Miriam. Then they moved and they traveled to Midbar Paran. So isn't it interesting? The Ramban, I think it's in the end of Kiseitse, in the parsha of Zechiras HaMalek, he says, this is one of the mitzvahs to remember. Many of us have this in the Siddur. After davening in the morning, you have the six remembrances, the Sheish Zechiros, remembering Maimon Har Sinai and Yetzias Mitzrayim and Shabbos and Amalek, etc. So one of these six is Zachor Eis Asher Asa Hashem Elokecha LeMiriam, remembering Miriam. This is quoted by the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim, Rav Yisrael Meir HaKohen of Radin, who wrote many Svarim, including editing the Mishnah Berurah, his most famous Sefer, people called him, I don't know why he got this nickname, but it must have been his biggest thing, is the Chafetz Chaim. That was his big hit, so to speak. What's Chafetz Chaim all about? It's all about the laws of speech, the halachas of speech. So he has an introduction where he counts up, if a person, God forbid, speaks negatively about somebody, he counts up all the biblical prohibitions and positive commandments that are transgressed. And then he has a whole bunch of curses, lo aleinu. So in the mitzvahs aseh, in the hakdama, before he starts the section of the actual laws, he tells you, you know what's a mitzvah aseh that you transgress, if God forbid you speak Lashon Hara? It's the mitzvah aseh of zechiras ma'aseh miriam. And he quotes the Ramban and others in the footnote, the Makor HaChaim, in the comments that he has explaining the laws. In the bottom, you know, he has like a second section underneath where he explains the various laws that he puts on the top. So the laws are on the top and the explanation is on the bottom. And he says, you know what this is coming to tell you? That even though she had the best intentions and she was at tzaddikus and she did everything, it was only in front of Aaron, nobody else was there. Nonetheless, that's still a problem. So isn't it ironic that, you know what we do every year, and it's according to the Ramban and according to the Chafetz Chaim on the books, it's a mitzvah saseh, it's to always speak bad about Miriam. You know what we're going to remember to say? Not to say Lashon Hara. We're going to say Lashon Hara about Miriam right now. Every single year, right in the Chumash. You know, we're going to tell everybody in the world exactly what she did and how bad it was. It's a little bit ironic, I think. Right, exactly, exactly. So we're going to excuse the Ribbono Shel Olam. We'll give it to him. We'll give him the pass that he had a good reason to put the mice in Miriam. You can imagine, what is Miriam known for? She's not known for the song at the sea. She's not known for the well. What do you have to remember about Miriam? That one time in her entire life, could you imagine we should all live a life like this, that one time we said Lashon Hara. The Ribbono Shel Olam wrote it down for the entire world to know. Unbelievable. So my question is, why is this important? And more than that, why is it important that the Torah relate the episode here? It could be that it's because it happened here, but is there some message, is there some thematic connection, is there some reason that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to understand that story in the context of everything else that's happening in Parashas Balosra and in what's about to happen in Parashas Shlach? So I think the first mahalach, the first approach to this, is the following. I'm quoting to you from a book. A friend of mine, Rabbi Elie Michel from Livingston, New Jersey, shared this with me. A book by the name, a guy by the name of Warren Bennis. Warren Bennis, he just died a couple of years ago. He's a big guy in leadership. He wrote a bunch of books about leadership. This one is called On Becoming a Leader. He says the following: in fact, mistakes contain potent lessons, but only if we think them through calmly, see where we went wrong, mentally revise what we're doing, and then act on the revisions. When a great batter strikes out, he doesn't linger for a moment over the goof, but instead sets about to improve his stance or his swing. And great batters do strike out. Babe Ruth not only set a home run record, he set a strikeout record as well. Think what a great batting average is. 400. Which means a great batter fails to get a hit more than half the times. Most of the rest of us are paralyzed by our failures, large and small. We're so haunted by them, so afraid that we're going to goof again, that we become fearful of doing anything. When jockeys are thrown, they get back on the horse because they know if they don't fear, their fear may immobilize them. Skipping. Reflection comes first, and then strategic action. As Roger Gould phrased it, reflection permits us to process our feelings, understand them, resolve our questions, etc. The first approach is reflection and learning from mistakes. So maybe we tell the story of Miriam, and we tell the story of this grand march, because the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to learn from our mistakes, which is definitely true. But I think there's a bigger message here. And by the way, I think I'm wondering if this message is even bigger than another important message about failure, because another aspect of this is the idea that failure indicates progress. It means that you're trying, and that we grow through failure, which is definitely true. But I don't think, at least to me, that approach is satisfactory. It's enough. Right? You could say that we grow through our mistakes, that Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'Kam, and that approach is very true, and that we learn that the Chazal never whitewashed our rabbis, and everybody makes mistakes, and people have imperfections. which is an important Torah, and it's very important to develop, and it's probably worth an entire shiur just about that. But I wonder if there's something else going on in this story, because the story of the Grand March and this is such a big collapse, it's more than just saying, oh, you know, it's a good thing to know that we're imperfect. This is more than just being imperfect. This is like a total train wreck, which that also fits in the same story, that you can have a total train wreck, and that's also part of moving forward. But I wonder if there's something a little bit different, a different mahalach, slightly different. And that is encapsulated in the words of this distinguished diplomat on your page, Sir Winston Churchill, who said, success is the ability to go from one failure to another with no loss of enthusiasm. Maybe what the Torah is telling you is one yesod. Maybe. It's not just that we grow through mistakes, and it's not just that we need to reflect on our mistakes. It's that when we make mistakes, we need to learn to move on, to be able to move forward. Even the most catastrophic mistakes, we need to be able to pick ourselves up and move on. In addition to dealing with the past in a whole various set of ways, we need, at the core, we need to be able to move forward. Maybe that's the point of these parashas. And let me explain what I mean, just based on my understanding of the psukim, and you'll see what you think. Chazal tell us that the children of Israel, they left Har Sinai, Ketinu Kaboreach mi Beis HaSefer. And that is a very, very serious problem. And yet, what does the Ribbono Shalom do? He says, yeah, it's a problem. Yeah, that's a peronios. But I'm going to give you a little parasha to stick in there to tell you that we're going to break up the parasha. So what do we give you? What parasha do we give you? Vayhi ben Tzoha Aron. You know what the Ribbono Shalom says? Keep moving forward. He chose that section because it's the section of moving forward. The people ask for, they get sucked into the cucumbers. So we're now, you know, if you're just looking on the page, so the description of moving forward starts in the first chunk. This is with the flags and the trumpets. So we're moving forward. We start traveling in the second section. We hit a little road bump. Moshe Rabbeinu says, don't worry, Hashem told me to tell you right now, Vayihi ben Tzoha Aron. After Vayihi ben Tzoha Aron, they start complaining, and the Asafsuf get into it. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, what? What does he say?
I give up.
I can't go on. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam tell Moshe Rabbeinu? You know what? You can't give up. You got to move forward. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to come up with option B. Option A was you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you, the Adon Anavim, you're going to teach them and guide them and lead them just by yourself. And now we realize, you know what? It's not meant to be. Okay. So you know what? We're going to go with option B. And what is option B? The 70 elders. And that's okay. We just need to learn, Moshe Rabbeinu, we need to learn that we need to move forward. You can't just give up. And Moshe Rabbeinu gets it. Because it's so interesting that when the 70 men show up, and Moshe Rabbeinu, he spreads some of his spirit that Hashem spreads from him to the others. If you look at the end of the paragraph on the second side, in Pasuk Chavav, two men, Vayisharu Shnei Anashim B'machaneh, two men were left in the camp. Shem HaEchad, what was the first one's name? Eldad. Shem HaSheni. That's right, Medad. And they were prophesying in the camp. And Chav Zayin, Vayara Tanar, Vayagin Lemoshe, Vayomar, Eldad Umedam Esnabam HaMachaneh. Yoshua says, you know what we need to do? Klaim. This can't be. It can't be that they are having Nevuah in the camp away from you, Moshe Rabbeinu. You're it, you're all of it. And Moshe says, nah, umi yiten kolam Hashem nevim, last verse in the section. Ki yiten Hashem es rucho aleihem. Moshe Rabbeinu says, you know what, Yehoshua, we've moved on to option B. And it's okay. It's okay, because moving forward, it's okay that other people prophesy in the camp. Maybe when I was thinking about this mahalach, I was influenced by this book that I'm in the middle of reading. It's called Option B. It's authored by Sheryl Sandberg together with Adam Grant. And what's the book about? I guess if you'd say it in halachic parlance, the book is about avelus. It's about mourning. Because this woman, Sheryl Sandberg, who's an author and a businesswoman, she is the COO of Facebook. I think she is Jewish, and her late husband, Dave, was Jewish, and he dropped dead suddenly, Rachmana Litzlan. Yeah. And the book is about, called Facing Adversity, Building Resilience, and Finding Joy. It's about her journey through avelus, through mourning, from the sudden death of her husband. And the idea is that there is option A, there's the first, you know, what she thought her life was going to look like. Now she married this young man, and they were going to, you know, that was going to be it. And now she has option B. When she went to bury her husband, it's not what she signed up for. And the whole book is about building resilience and how to not forget about the past, not ignore the past, live with the past, but be able to move forward.
Opening a new door.
And it's a very interesting book. It builds on a lot of, for those who are interested, I'm very interested in psychology. So a lot of these famous psychological insights and studies and things are sprinkled throughout here. I think it's a pretty easy read. It's a nice shape also for a book. So this is what I'm thinking of as I'm looking at these psukim, about the Rabbeinu Shalom is telling us, you know, we thought it was going to look one way. Moshe Rabbeinu, that's what it was going to be. But you know what? It's not, and that's okay because we could still move forward. No simanachnu. So what happens immediately after this parsha? We have the catastrophe of the Kivros HaTaiva, and guess what? Nasu ha'am chatzeros, we moved on. People died, we moved on. And then we have the story of Miriam. So what do we have with the story of Miriam? We have an episode of somebody who makes a mistake. The great, tzaddikus, unbelievable Yev Shalashar, Miriam HaNeviah. Amazing. So she makes a mistake. So what does the Torah tell us? She makes a mistake, and she has to spend 7 days in confinement. Like Benning said, she's going to learn from that mistake. She's going to reflect on it. But then, what do we learn? The people didn't travel until she was ready, but once she was ready, va'achar nasua mechatzeros, they kept moving forward. That's the story of the Maisa Miriam. The Zechir of Maisa Miriam, perhaps, okay, maybe it's not the pshat, but this is a beautiful drash if you want to buy it, is that you're remembering the fact that Miriam made a mistake and you shouldn't do the same thing, and just like she reflected on it, but you're also remembering the fact that guess what? After 7 days, she picked herself up and she moved on. In contrast to Moshe Rabbeinu, who when he finally had it, he said, I'm done, I'm not moving forward. The Rabbeinu Shalom said, no, you will. And Miriam says, okay, that's how we're going to move. And it's so interesting that what happens next, in the next section of the Torah, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemar Shlach Lecha Anashim. The Rabbeinu Shalom says, you know what we're going to do? We're moving forward. We're going to send spies because we are going into the land of Israel. And it could be, you know, there's so much debate among the Mefarshim about why they sent the spies. Did the Rabbeinu Shalom tell them to send the spies? But in Sefer Dvarim, it sounds like we asked for it. It could be two things. It could be the Rabbeinu Shalom told them to send spies because he saw that we weren't on the level that we thought we would have been on when we left Sinai. And now we need the spies. So it could be it was his Eitzah, and it could have worked out well. There's a Ramban that sounds, Ramban is a beautiful pshat in Devarim, not for today. But the idea is that the Rabbeinu Shalom is telling us, yeah, Parshas Baloska was a disaster. The Rav described the grand march and how we completely and totally blew it. We rerouted our journey from the grand march of history to talking about pickles and cucumbers. But the Chiddush of Parashas Baaloscha is option B. The Rebbe Shlomo said, it's okay. You can imagine, like a parent who's so frustrated at the amusement park with the kids and they still won't behave. But you know what? They don't want this day to get thrown down the toilet at 12 o'clock. They don't want to be screaming at the kids right now and destroying the whole day. So you know what? The parent just like, they just hold on. They're like, okay, this is not the day that we envisioned, but you know what? We're going to make another half a day out of this. It's okay. We're going to do this. You know, you feel that tension. So Rebbe Shlomo says to us, Kiviyachal, our Father in Heaven, he says, okay, you know what? It's okay. We're now going to have 70 elders, but that's okay. We're going to keep moving. We're not going to be derailed. We're not going to stay here. So Shlach Lecha Anashim. Maybe the idea originally wasn't to send spies, but now in our spiritual lowly state that we have, focusing on pickles and cucumbers, we had the Grand March, we blew it, but we're going to keep going, and now we need spies. And hopefully we'll get that right too. And what happens? We don't get it right. So the Rebbe Shlomo says, you know what? We're going to go to option B. And this time option B is not as pretty as option A, or even option B in Parshas Baaloscha. Because option B in Parshas Baaloscha was, okay, we'll go to Israel. Now, option B is, you guys won't go to Israel, but your children will go to Israel. Turn around, Penu Sulachem Hamidbar Derech Yam Suf. Your now option B is not, it's not so great. It's going to be 40 years of wandering, and then you're going to go into the desert. But you're still going to go. We're still going. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, now option B looks different. You're going to turn around. You're going to keep going. And what do some of the people do? We call them the Ma'apilim. What did they do?
They tried to go up.
And what does Moshe Rabbeinu tell them?
This is the worst scenario.
He says, don't do it. It won't work. What's the argument between the Ma'apilim and Moshe Rabbeinu? The Ma'apilim said, we're still on option A. The Rebbe Shlomo says, we're going to Israel. We're going to go. We're ready to go. Let's go, Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, I'm sorry. This is not option A anymore. We lost option A. So we're going to go with option B, and we're all going to turn around and go back to the desert. We're going to wander for 40 years. And they said, no, we're in option A. And what happens when they go up? They get crushed. Because the Rebbe Shlomo says, no, life is not always the way you originally wanted it with option A. Sometimes it's going to be option B. And in this case, the option B was our fault. We got to own that. We got to reflect on it. We got to have the Zechiras Ma'ase Miriam. So there is that. You can't take away the sting of the collapse of Parshas Baaloscha. And the despair, the feeling down of Parshas Shlach, how we let it all go with the spies. But what does Moshe Rabbeinu tell them after everything went bad? They're going to go 40 years in the desert. So of course the people are very sad. And he tells them,
they accepted it.
He tells them, I get the exact words. Machar pnu usu'ulachem hamidbar derech yamsuf. Turn and travel through the yamsuf. It's interesting that our punishment in the desert was not just to sit there where they sent the meraglim. You might have thought, the Rebbe Shlomo would have told them, you know, it's like a child in a timeout, lahavdil. You did that, sit there right now and stay there. But the Rebbe Shlomo didn't tell us, sit there in Kadesh Barnea for 40 years. What did he tell us? Se'u lachem hamidbar derach yamsuf. Travel through the desert. So we're going to make 42 stops in total traveling. Why are we doing that? Why don't we just stay there? Based on what we said today, maybe that's the same point. Se'u lachem. No simanach. You always have to be moving forward. Even after something as devastating as the chet hamaraglim, the sin of the spies, which is, I mean, it is what it is. There's nothing that's going to make it sweet or better. But the Rebbe Shalom wants to know, you have to keep moving forward. You can't just stay there. So in this case, moving forward, it's going to be option B. It's going to be really circuitous. But the point is se'u lachem hamidbar. We're going to keep traveling in the desert because you always have to keep moving forward. And I think it's a very powerful idea.
It's traveling in the desert moving forward.
So that's the thing. My suggestion is, what I'm wondering together with you, is that even though they are going in a roundabout way, ultimately they know every time they get up, they ask themselves the question, where are we going? The answer is, we're going to Israel. It brings us back to where we started, the Grand March. Right, Rav Soloveitchik's majestic description of the Great March to Israel? Now it's not such a great march. Now it's like a wandering, meandering around. But it is a continuation. It's part of that same journey. It's Noseya. It's not the Yisro, Noseya, we're going, Nosem and Achnu, we're going today. But we're going on part of the journey. And so therefore, with the week we can look at it is to say, this is the option B. This is not the grand march. This is not the epic, you know, amazing feature film that we hoped for. But it's still moving forward. Even though it looks like it's going, you know, it's going east when it should be going west. But at the end of the day, the Rebbe Shalom wants to tell us, no seya. You have to move forward. You can't sit in Kadesh Barnea and lick your wounds for another 38 years. Yeah.
A naive question.
Yeah.
Did they know at that point that they would not be entering the land? That it
yes.
would be the next generation?
Yes, they did.
Despite the fact that they were moving forward. How is that conveyed to them?
So in this section, in the next segment of Psukim, this Nosim Anachnu is before they are informed. Then they are informed the next section that their children will inherit. When the people hear this in the end of Perek Yudalid, Vayis'ablu Ha'am Ma'od, the people were mourning. And that's when Vayashkimu Babokar Vayalu El Rosh Ahar, the Ma'apilim, that's when they wanted to go up. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, I'm sorry. They said,
that part's over.
So what is it? What's the next part? And then, all right, there's more to talk about this in a different parsha. The next part is Hashem starts giving them halachos from the land of Israel. Why is he giving them halachos of the land of Israel? They're about to embark on a U-turn to go back through the desert. So what's the answer, based on what we're saying now?
They should be moving forward.
That's it. We're going to move forward. We're still going to dream about Israel. We're still going to go to Israel. Maybe we won't, but our kids will go.
And they will impart that to their children.
Yes.
So Hashem was preparing for the children.
Yes. So the next section is, Kisavo el Eretz Moshe Voseichem, in Perek Tesvav. When you go to the land, you're going to bring karbanos. And after that, you're going to have challah, a bunch of mitzvahs. Don't think that it's all over. It's not all over. There's always option B, the Rebbe Shalom says. It's not majestic, but it's still the journey. No semanachnu, we are still going. And how powerful is this for our own lives? Because I suspect everybody in life has times when it's a collapse, and sometimes, Rachman al-Itzlan, the person has an epic, catastrophic collapse.
You accept it.
And that's what this... Yes?
...has sections...
Yes?
...of books... written about this.
Dealing with failure.
I guess the Torah was first.
That's right. The union used to say we had it first. That's what this is all about. It's about dealing with failure. Sometimes it's within our capacity, and sometimes it's It's not within our capacity, but I wonder, as now as I look at it with a fresh set of eyes, I wonder if that's what the revulsion is telling us. At the end of the day, even when it's really rough, when we have so many of these string of disappointments, but still, Noseya, Pnu Sulachem, you got to move forward. You have to find a way to create the value and the meaning and the love and the connection and the vision, even within all of that. Never lose sight. And so hopefully, that's exactly it. Because Winston Churchill said that success is the ability to go from one failure to another with no loss of enthusiasm. Isn't that what's happening in the parasha? We go from peronios to peronios, and yet the Ribbono Shel Olam expects us to say, you know what, okay, this is option B, but this is going to be our new mahalach, our new approach in Avodas Hashem. And hopefully that will give us some chizuk as anybody goes through whatever challenging times they have.
I
yes.